A very good evening to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So today is Tuesday, 16th of March 2021. We continuing from this book, The Essence of the Infinite Meanings, teaching from the adapted verse of the Sutra of Infinite Meaning, Wu Liang Yi Jing. We are at page 142. So as usual, before we start the class, we will have our usual half an hour of awareness-based meditation. We will off the light so that you can have your meditation straight away. Just relax body and mind. Then develop awareness. Just maintain awareness, aware for as long as you can. To stabilize your awareness nature so that you can realize your silent mind, which is your true mind. When you are without thought, you are completely relaxed and silent. That is the first training. When you can develop that, then you can start to understand what is meditation. Because without the ability to realize your true mind, your silent mind, which is also your meditative mind, you cannot meditate. So the fastest way is to relax, maintain awareness, and let everything settle down. Whatever arises, the thought process, sankhara activity, mind state, let it arise. And let it slow down and cease. When it slows down and cease, your mind will return to its original state before the thinking, before the stirring, before the arising of sankhara activity. You have to realize that. And that is your meditative mind, which is also your true mind, your silent mind. Okay, I will now set the alarm for 30 minutes so that you can have your 30 minutes of awareness-based meditation. Okay, for those who wants to continue with your old way of training your mind, you can. If you are used to having an object of meditation or any skillful means that can help you develop the meditative mind, which is the mindfulness, you can use them. Whatever method, technique, or skillful means that you are familiar with, you can also use them. Okay. In the adapted verses of the Sutra of Infinite Meaning, we see. So it's written in the adapted verses. Of the Sutra of Infinite Meaning, it was stated that these great beings, the Bodhisattva, they uphold the pure precepts of all Buddhas, even at the cost of their lives. They never cause harm. They never break the precept. As the Buddha's disciple, of course, he must value and uphold the pure precepts of all Buddhas. So coming to this pure precepts of all Buddhas, I must explain a little bit. When you take a Bodhisattva vow, there are four basic vows of Bodhisattvas, that one we know. But there is also the three types of pure precepts of Sammasambuddha. So these three types of pure precepts of Sammasambuddha, they are very complete, very comprehensive, and cover a very wide scope. It's more than just the five precepts or whatever precepts. It encompasses the full practice. So for those who have the Bodhisattva vow, the yellow card that I have prepared for you all, the format. you can refer to it. Yeah? It is under the second page, yeah? Page 2. Mm. So under page 1, taking of the Bodhisattva vow, you have the special aspiration, yeah? To walk this way, the Bodhisattva way. Then after that, you invoke power or merits, yeah? For blessings and causes and conditions, yeah? From the distant past until now, for you to have the special aspiration to go this way. Yeah? So it's basically about invoking power or merits from the distant past until now, for it to arise the causes and conditions for this nature of yours to have the following right Dhamma understanding life after life whenever you choose to arise, yeah, or come. So when you choose to arise means you choose to come. Then the other one is for those who don't have the ability, you have to come. This is to karmic, yeah? Karmic conditioning through your karmic nature. So you have to come in the form of a form and mind. Yeah? Yeah. So these three important right views are right view with regards to the law of karma, law of dependent origination, paticca sammuppada, then the Four Noble Truths. Then the second right view is to understand the two aspects of the five aggregates of form and mind clearly. We are the direct seeing to realize that they are all conditioned arising entity, causal phenomena, hence impermanent, leading to suffering, non-self, not me, and empty. That these so-called living beings, or in our case, the human being, the five aggregates of form and mind, is just a karmically conditioned vehicle and tool for us to come to this existential world, to develop the cultivation and experience all of the beauty and wonders of life. So use it with wisdom to arise the right thought, right speech, and right action to be a blessing to all and not to be deluded by it. So this aspect of right view is also very important. Then to constantly recite the understanding of the following Dhamma profoundly. Yeah? Rupang anicang, rupang anatta, followed by Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, and Vinyanam. Then the summary. Sabbe Sankara anicang, sabbe Sankara dukang, sabbe Dhamma anatta. Then after that is the third aspiration, the third right view. So this third right view is where the three sets of pure precepts are. The pure precepts, they come in sets. So these are the pure precepts of all Sama Sambuddha. So you must have this ability to comprehend this three set of pure precepts in order to walk the path of the Bodhisattva. So I have stated it down here as follow, you listen. Eh? Having developed the above right views, eh? This nature of mind vow to always keep the following three sets of pure precepts of the Sama Sambuddha, of all Sama Sambuddha. So these three sets of pure precepts are, you listen, eh? They are quite similar to the advice of the Buddha, except they are modified to become precepts, eh? Sets of pure precepts. So the first set of pure precepts is to avoid all evil and to understand clearly what constitutes evil. That is the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion constitute evil. So the first set of pure precepts is to avoid all evil and to understand clearly what constitutes evil. Whatever that has the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, they are evil roots, roots of all evil. So they constitute evil. So you have to expand on all this understanding. So the first set of pure precept is already an elaborate training. Not just reciting the precepts like Panatipata, Viramani, Sikkhapadang, Samadhi, Yami, but you don't know the deep meaning, why you do that, why are precepts important. So this one goes into the full understanding. The first set of pure precept is to avoid all evil. And how to do that? To do that, you have to understand what constitutes evil. And to understand what constitutes evil, you have to understand the Buddha's teaching, the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. Then you have to expand on them. What is greed? Lobha. Greed, the meaning is very wide, very profound. Greed is not just greediness. Here, greed covers all of your desire, covetousness, selfishness, craving, your like, dislike. These are all part and parcel of greed. Your positive craving are all greed, even your lust, your whatever craving, desire, attachment, clinging, grasping. When you give meaning to things, when you hold on to things, when you want to cheat people, deceive people, these are the evil roots of greed. There is selfishness. There is greediness behind. So all this, you have to see them. Then later on, the subtle one, the subtle desire or craving, you have to understand them. Then what constitutes the second evil roots of hatred? It's not only getting angry, hating people. All of your negative emotions like envy and jealousy are part of this evil roots of hatred. They call dosa in Pali. Greed is lobha. Then delusion is moha. So whatever negative emotion, like your dislike, like your whatever unhappy feeling, unhappy emotion, they fall under this category of dosa or hatred, the evil roots. Then what constitutes delusion, moha, especially self-delusion? When there is this sakkaya ditthi, there is delusion, there is moha, means you do not understand the truth, the reality. You don't have right view. So because you don't have right view, you have self-delusion, sakkaya-ditthi. That delusion, when it's set in, it creates fear in you. It creates delusion in you. So all of your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your sorrow, your lamentation, your doubt constitute delusion, moha. So this scope are very, very wide and far ranging. So in order to keep the first precept, you really need very strong understanding. So I repeat, the first set of pure precept is to avoid all evil through understanding clearly what constitutes evil, through thoroughly comprehending the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. Then the second set of pure precept is even more comprehensive. It is to cultivate all virtues and blessings and wholesomeness, leading to the perfection of them all. So this precept is a set, and it takes a long time to complete. Whatever wholesomeness, when there is condition to do, you have to cultivate it. So to cultivate all virtue is already a very big scope. Then all blessings and wholesomeness, leading to the perfection of them all. You not only cultivate them, you need to refine upon them and perfect them all. So this second set of pure precept is also very important. Then the third set is to develop wisdom. That's why the three advice of the Sammasambuddha is Sabba papasa akaranang kusalesa upasampadan sacitta pariyottapadang etang buddhana sasana. So from his advice, they transform his advice into the three sets of pure precepts. Means the Buddha's advice become the three sets of pure precepts of all Sammasambuddha. That this is the advice of all Sammasambuddha. So the third set is to purify the mind, to develop wisdom, to awaken. So here under the third set of precepts, you have to cultivate wisdom to help liberate and take across all sentient beings. Then not only to cultivate wisdom, you need to perfect them all too. So cultivate all wisdom to perfection of wisdom, so that you can help liberate and take across all sentient beings. So these three sets of pure precept are the one that is stated by the author in the Sutra of Infinite Meaning. But it was not mentioned. At first I thought it would be mentioned. That's why in the last sharing I didn't really go into it. Then I just look at the thing before the class start just now. I realized it was not mentioned anywhere or explained. So at least now I read to you, then you can understand. So after making the special aspiration to walk the Bodhisattva way, we are having all this right view and the ability to uphold and keep the three sets of pure precept. Then only you move on to take the four basic vow following the format that I have developed for you. So this one, you go back and read yourself and develop the understanding. Then after that, part three is additional vows for you to break all karmic obstruction to bring about the way. Means for you to walk this way successfully. Then additional miscellaneous vows to enhance the cultivation. Yeah, everyone is different. Yeah? So you can actually add in all the additional miscellaneous vows to make your Bodhisattva way unique and comprehensive. So this is what you have to go through and bear in mind. Yeah? Okay, we'll continue with the As the Buddha's disciple, of course, we must value and uphold the pure precepts of all Buddha. So these three sets of pure precepts of all Buddha I have explained. So now you understand. If we start indulging ourselves, then we will easily break the precept and harm our wisdom life. This is very true. Because indulgence will lead to downfall, especially self-indulgence. Similarly, self-mortification is the same. So you need to be heedful, ever mindful, constantly meditative. Then you need to have the faith, sincerity to walk this way, then to constantly diligently persevere to develop the cultivation until fulfillment of your mission to realize Samasambuddha. So we read on. For all Buddhas, the process of spiritual cultivation is inseparable from upholding the precept. This is very true. The three sets of pure precept is what you do. If you do that, then you will be successful in your cultivation. So what is said here is very true. For all Buddhas, Samasambuddhas, the process of spiritual cultivation is inseparable from upholding the three sets of pure precept. Very true. The functions of the three sets of pure precept is to protect our body and mind, so that we will not excel, we will not be assailed by unwholesome influence, and will thus avoid creating negative karma. So the three sets of pure precept are very wide range of cultivation of the three basic advice of all Samasambuddha. They are the advice of all Buddhas. So this aspect of training is very, very important. So I read this part again. For all Buddha, the process of spiritual cultivation is inseparable from upholding the precept. Then the function of the precept is to protect our form and mind, so that we will not be assailed by unwholesome influence, and will thus avoid creating negative karma. We uphold precepts to prevent wrongdoings and put a stop to evil. They help us to keep our mind on the right course, to love and to respect ourselves and others, and to avoid hurting or harming others for their own selfish gain or benefits. So this one is very clear. We have to always be vigilant of our thoughts and action. Are we giving rise to unwholesome thought? So this is your inquiry. Whenever you are free, do we take any action that does not benefit others, or action which are improper that leads to violation of precept, negativity of karma? So all this we need to check. We must be steadfast in upholding the precept. That's why you must take precepts seriously. No matter what kind of negative force pushes us to do otherwise, we have to uphold the precept. Even if our life is being threatened, we must not do anything that hurts others or harm others. So this is what the cultivation is all about. It's not what people think. That's why the great beings, the Bodhisattva, they are different. They can do things that normal cultivator or normal living beings cannot do. We often hear criminals say, this one is just for sharing. I think the author put this as an example. It was like there was a powerful force, evil force behind me, driving me to do all this evil. That's why I become a drug addict. Then I start to sell drugs and commit other crimes. So this is justification. This is the result of being unable to firmly uphold precept. Means you can be influenced by all this selfish intent. Then blame it on evil forces and all those things, or others' influence. This is the result of being unable to firmly uphold your precepts. If we can abide by the precept and love and respect ourselves as well as others, then we will not commit acts that benefit others but hurt others. Then we will not commit acts that benefit ourselves, but hurt others. So we uphold the precepts even at the cost of being harmed. So this one is not purposely let yourself be harmed. Sometimes you cannot avoid because situation is such. You have to endure, you have to endure. In the Buddhist scripture, there is this story about upholding precepts. One day at dusk, a young man who was on a long journey arrived at the house. With the sky quickly darkening, he worried that he would not find another house further ahead that could provide shelter for the night. So he knocked on the door of the house. The head of the household opened the door, saw that this young person had a dignified demeanor, and instantly felt a sense of reverence for him. Thus the householder politely invited the young man into the house and asked, "Where did you come from? Where are you heading? There is still a long way ahead of you, and there is no more houses along the way." He said, "I come from the city of Savatthi, but I cannot go back." "Why? What happened?" The young man said, "It is a shameful matter to speak of. In the city of Savatthi, everybody believes in the honors of the Buddha's teaching and strictly uphold the five precepts. My parents are also devout disciples of the Buddha. One day I went to visit a fellow classmate. He politely invited me to drink with him. It was difficult for me to decline. So when I returned home, I dare not deceive my parents. So I confessed that I had drunk alcohol, which is a violation of the fifth precepts. Because I committed a great wrong, my parents angrily sent me away. I hope to use this time to improve my practice of the precept of do not partake alcohol or intoxicant that leads to negativity of mind state that can make your conscience that can affect your conscience. So when your consciousness is being affected through the influence on it of intoxicant. So intoxicant is not only alcohol, drug, and all those that have the effect of intoxicating your consciousness. They are all classified under the fifth precept. Otherwise, I dare not show my face in Savatthi again. The owner of the house found the young man to be good and honest, so he kindly led him to the guest room to rest. That day, the owner of the house was busily preparing for his monthly sacrifice to the tree spirit of wealth. Every month, the owner would prepare rich sacrificial offerings for the tree spirits to enjoy. That night, after night, the tree spirit appeared as usual, but they did not dare get close to the house. The owner saw that the tree spirit hesitated to enter the house, so he quickly got down on his knee and politely beseeched them. "I have prepared the sacrifices. Why won't you accept them?" From a distance, the tree spirit told him, "Today you have an honored guest in your house, and your house is filled with the righteous atmosphere of Dharma protectors. So we cannot get close. As soon as we finish speaking, they disappear." As soon as they finish speaking, they disappear. The next day, at daybreak, the owner invited the young man to a sumptuous breakfast. He brought out what had happened the night before when he had tried to make sacrifices to the tree spirit. Upon hearing this, the young person smiled and said, "I practice the Buddha's teaching, diligently upholding the five precepts and do the 10 good deeds. Even though I once broke the precepts of consuming or drinking alcohol, I have always uphold the other four. Thus, the righteous atmosphere of Dharma protector is still around me. So that was the reason, because he actually obliged because of that good friend, the close friend. Then I believe this particular person must have the understanding while he partake. He makes sure his consciousness is not really affected until he will be conditioned into breaking precepts and all those things. But because of the way the parents are brought up, I think that the parents are too strict. When you are too strict and too rigid, you will end up that way. That's why they reprimand the son and tell the son to leave. But being a cultivator, he actually is very pure in his precept. That's why that night, when he asked for shelter, the owner of that householder can recognize him or can feel that he is righteous, he's honorable, and he is a virtuous person. But he was very frank. He never lied. He said the reason why he has to move away from Savati is because he can't go back. The parents has actually asked him to leave. So he has to go forward. And that is the house he need to take shelter and have a rest. Because further down, maybe a long distance, he can't find another proper shelter like this one. So that's why he requested for permission. And the owner happily actually invited him in. And because of his clarity of mind state when he was staying there, that he didn't drink alcohol anymore after that. And he has the virtue, the other precepts. So he is complete with the five precepts and the 10 meritorious action. So these five precepts and the 10 good deeds, they are very powerful, very important. So Dharma protectors protected him. That's why the whole house, the three spirits, they did not enter the house because these Dharma protectors and their virtue are too strong. So this is a very good sharing. Then the owner or the householder asks, what are the five precepts and the 10 good deeds? And this is where the teaching comes in. The young man shared the Buddha's teaching of the principle of upholding the precepts, the five precepts and the 10 good deeds. The owner was delighted to hear them and was very grateful to the young man for helping him to understand that his way of worshipping the spirits could not compare to the Buddha Dharma, that in fact the Buddha's teaching contained the ultimate principles. Since upholding the precepts could protect him, the owner was happy and eager to take the belief and practice the Dhamma. So he told the young man, I will quickly prepare to go to the city of Savati and ask the Buddha to accept me as a disciple, so that I can take refuge under the tree threshold and accept the five precepts from him. Means he received the five precepts. When you receive the five precepts administered by the Sangha, it's like you take refuge. This story tells us that as Buddhist disciples, we should be diligent in following the precept, in upholding the precepts. When we break a precept, we lose a part of the righteous atmosphere of our Dharma protector and harm our wisdom line. This is very true. When we lose our sense of righteousness, we leave ourselves vulnerable to evil influence. This is very true. So we must always uphold and keep our precepts and only do good, avoid evil, then meditate to purify our mind via following the advice of all Buddhas. So coming to the topic of keeping precept, you must do it to realize the power of precepts and merits, leading to virtue, wholesomeness, and blessings. You must witness them to understand and to have the faith, and you will go this way, because if you really keep your precepts and you never violate them, over a certain period of time, your life transforms, you become different, and you will have good birth. It seems one of the most important criteria for having a good birth, to be born in the Deva realm, is to keep the five precepts. If you can keep the five precepts, uphold it with sincerity, with faith and diligence, you will definitely have the parami to have the good birth, to be born in the Deva realm. Or at least to have the good karma, the good blessings, because all these precepts lead to virtue. The precept got two parts. One is avoiding evil, means you don't harm others, you protect yourself. So when you don't harm others through avoiding all evil, you protect your negativity karma. So there is no condition for all these things to hit back or come back to you. And by keeping precepts, your virtue is fantastic. Even not harming others, not causing problem to others, it's like wearing masks. You not only protect yourself from falling into the evil states of negativity of karma, you even protect others. So precept has that power that people cannot understand. Then to go beyond avoiding evil is the second aspect of precept, which very few people understand. Means to cultivate virtue and blessings wherever there is condition, means the ennobler. You not only don't kill, you develop compassion. You not only don't steal, don't cheat, don't deceive, don't misappropriate things, you develop the ennobler of generosity, kindness, goodness, wholesomeness. So all this is what precept is all about. And precepts generates a lot of virtue. A virtuous person is a person who really upholds his precept, his or her precepts. And you can do that, I assure you. Your life will be beautiful. That's why do not underestimate precepts. Precepts are very important. Every pre-puja, we renew our precept. Every day, we supposed to renew our precept. That is to constantly remind you of the advice of the Buddha, of the importance of holding on to this precept. But it's never worthwhile violating the precept. That's why the advice of the Buddha is sabbe, is all evil, papasa akarana. You have to avoid all evil, not just avoid evil, all evil. That's why you have to really uphold your precepts. And you need to do that over a period of time, consistently, with faith, with understanding, to see the result. And when the result manifests, you will believe, because it's like you are protected, you are very blessed. That's why Kayamita, who travel with me as a group on spiritual trip and other things, they will know. It's like we are very blessed. we are being like somehow protected. And a lot of things go our way. Then the weather too, like very kind. And everything, sometimes even the traffic, you cannot believe. It just smoothened out and everything turned out for the better. It's like a blessing in disguise. There are many things that are meant to be for me. So we can avoid disaster and all those things because virtue protect. During the time of the Buddha, people ask the Buddha, what is the highest protection? Surprisingly, the Buddha answer, nothing else protect you except your virtue. Virtue is your highest protection. Then the highest well, the Buddha's answer really make a lot of people shake their head. They cannot understand why he said it that way. The highest protection, he say, is virtue, not to have bodyguard, guns and all those things. He said the opposite, not to train yourself in kung fu and all those things. But the highest protection in life is your virtue. When you have virtue, you are very well protected. Then when it comes to wealth, the highest wealth, people also ask the Buddha, what constitutes the highest wealth? His very wise and very simple answer is contentment. You are contented. You are very wealthy. You have the highest wealth. Without contentment, you still want, you still have craving. So how can you say you are wealthy? You are still not wealthy. But when you are contented with whatever you have, you are really wealthy. In that sense that there is no more need. You don't really need anything else. Where you are contented with life, contented with the way things unfold. You have the Dhamma. You have the understanding, the wisdom. That's why the Dhamma way is very beautiful. Yeah. Virtue is really beautiful. Without virtue, there is no Dhamma. Ultimately, whatever cultivation you do, I always share with Kayamita, you can recall, you can recall what I used to say. Means if you're attentive, you will hear this part. Yeah. Without virtue, there is no real cultivation. And without wisdom, there is no real virtue. Virtue comes from wisdom. When you have developed the cultivation of the Dhamma correctly, the wisdom that arises will naturally bring forth the understanding to make you virtuous. Why? Because when you have the Dhamma, when you already awaken, you are incapable of evil. So the absence of evil will make you virtuous. You don't have to be good. The absence of evil is good. The absence of evil is virtuous. So a virtuous person is an enlightened person who has the Dhamma, who will never violate their precepts anymore. The three sets of pure precepts, they will uphold them. And they will never break any of that precepts. So Dhamma cultivation has many levels, many understanding. Not until you have reached the tail end. There are a lot of things about cultivation the cultivator cannot really comprehend. Initially, it's mostly the superficial practices at the thought level. Then at the four right effort level. Then after that, you move on to the wisdom part, the purification of mind, the meditation, the cultivation, the silent mind, the direct seeing, the insight, the awakening. And during that time, it's all mindfulness. No more thought pace. No more effort. So Dhamma is very beautiful. In a way, it's quite abstract. In the sense that it's beyond thought, beyond mind. You cannot use the mundane mind, the knowledge and the concept to try to grasp at it and develop the understanding, thinking that you know. Those are knowledge, which are not wisdom. It will not lead to awakening, transformation. It will not lead to wisdom, to liberate the mind. So all these understanding are very important. To uphold the three sets of pure precepts of Buddha at all costs requires firm perseverance. That's why I say you must have these three virtues. Faith in the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha. Sincerity. Sincerely want to walk this way. Then you must have the third perseverance virtue. So when you diligently walk this way with perseverance, all of your cultivation will be fulfilled. You will definitely realize the awakening or enlightenment. You will walk the path of Dhamma successfully when you have these three important virtues. I repeat, faith, sincerity, and perseverance. We need a strong resolve in order to persevere. This one is really true. If you don't have a strong faith in the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha, if you don't have this strong resolve to go this way, to uphold the precept, to cultivate the Dhamma, to complete the training, you cannot persevere. You need a strong resolve in order to persevere. This is very true. For example, I remember how Cixi volunteers immediately went to Sichuan after the great earthquake to provide emergency relief, free medical clinics, and so on. At the same time, they led many of the local young people to help the emergency relief effort, forming a connection with them. The main work of the young volunteers was translation, because the local Sichuan dialect is very difficult for outsiders to understand. So many elementary and high school students took on the role of interpreters. The volunteers found that one of the children, at only 12 years old, was already addicted to alcohol. In fact, from the time he was 9 years old, he drank a bottle of liquor a day. Dr. Yi Tianhao from the Kaohsiung Tima chapter was part of the free clinic team. During the free medical outreach, Dr. Ye spent a lot of time with this young volunteer. He patiently explained to him how excessive drinking could increase the risk of disease such as cancer, especially liver cancer, lung cancer, and so on. So Dr. Ye also helped him to understand that if he destroyed his body in this way, not only would he suffer the torment of illness, but he would also damage his mind, means that intoxicant can intoxicate the mental consciousness and make your consciousness very down and very low, leading to heedlessness. This child, who had developed a strong connection with Dr. Ye, finally vowed, "I will quit drinking." So this is really something. From an addict to somebody who can vow to quit drinking and uphold the fifth precepts. So this is not easy. I think most young career working people have problem with the fifth precepts. Maybe it's part of our Malaysian culture and also our Chinese culture. we have a lot of this celebration or festival where they indulge in all this alcohol drinking, even during wedding, even New Year occasion and all those things, or certain festival or birthday functions. Also, sometimes you will come across a lot of this what they call cultural practices that they inherit. So they like to yam sing. You know what is yam sing? So means in Cantonese they always say "bat zui mou guai." We must drink until we drunk. Then they always say, to be happy, you must drink. But they really don't have much understanding of the danger it poses to the individual. First, the fifth precept has a reason. If you violate the fifth precept, the danger is it will affect your consciousness. Then when your consciousness is affected, it can lead you to break all the other four precepts. That's why the fifth precept is also very vital. Then if you break the fifth precept, it can cause disease, sickness, hangover. Your health can be affected. You will throw out, vomit, and do wrong things. Because your consciousness has become so badly affected. Sometimes you have moments of unconscious mind. You lapse into unconscious moment without you knowing it, because it has the effect that the alcohol like want to shut you down and knock you off and cause you to forget everything and sleep. So if you drink and drive, it's very dangerous. That's why a lot of accidents happen. So the fifth precept, you must reflect, contemplate. Then when you understand, my advice is avoid, keep to the precepts. Of course, it's not easy for most people. And in the early days, I remember there are some, they came and talked to me, what do you think of social drinking? Social drinking means I know my limit one. I don't get myself drunk or intoxicated one. Like yin chao. In English you call one yin chao is what? Entertain people. Because your job is to entertain people. Or sometimes it's like your close friend, your good friend, or your relative, or sometimes your in-law, he like to drink. He asks you for a drink. So you have to entertain him. Partly is also respect. Entertain out of respect. So we call that yin chao. Then sometimes because your career demand you to have this what they call obligatory type of entertainment. So they say bring your client out for dinner and entertainment. Then in China, you don't drink, you are not a friend. They don't want to do business with you. It's in their culture is rather. That's why you go to China. You better get ready. Your understanding, otherwise you cannot. So different places, they have their culture. But if you are serious about it, you can quit. Take my case for example. My case is a very good example, because I'm a civil engineer. You know what is a civil engineer? So normally you associate with contractors, consultant, client, and government departments and all that thing. So entertainment is part of that career, the industry, and all this thing. So initially, I remember when I just graduated, before the government job came or I was called out for government service, I was working for a contractor. And the first thing I was told when I arrived at the job site was there was a lunch followed by a dinner. Then the first thing my director and my immediate boss, they all told me is, you must get to know all these people. That they are our subcontractors, our supplier, our transporter, and our associate, business associate, and some are our client. So you need to establish a good relationship and rapport. And the best way to do is to entertain them, to do all those things. Then the first thing you must learn is to drink, they say. So I don't like to drink, I don't know how to drink. Then the first time when I was going through all this, wow, there was a lot of this type of thing. When you tell them you don't drink because you never drink before, I say, ah, you see, don't worry, you say, try a bit, you say, we will teach you, we will train you. But because of the crowd and the way they actually go about doing this thing, the first word that come out of their mouth is, how can an engineer don't drink? You had to end up as a contractor where I was working for a contractor. So somehow my good karma, initially I have to maybe you call ing chao. So I say okay, I try a little bit. Then the first taste of the beer, I don't like the beer. I say I don't enjoy drinking it. I don't like the taste and it's so alien to me. And after I drink, I feel tipsy. Then my consciousness is affected very fast. Then I'm sensitive. So I told them, no, never mind. Then I try to put a lot of ice. Then later on, they pour me liquor. Or what they call, the other one is what? There is one liquor, the other type is what? No, whiskey. Whiskey. Very heavy. Then one of my staff, he tried to help me. He said, Tio, you don't like the taste. The taste is very strong. It will knock you off. I teach you with it. You put 7-Up. Then I pour in the 7-Up. The taste become better now. Because we study chemistry, we know. Chemical, organic chemistry. Alcohol plus that 7-Up become ester, come on. Very nice flavor. Very nice drink. So I say this one, okay. Then he said, put more ice to dilute the thing. But I tell you, because this whiskey and hard liquor, the content of alcohol is so high. That time I didn't know. Then the effect come later. So when I returned home, I actually vomited, but not drunk, definitely. So for the first month or so, I was going through that phase, experiencing. So I got no choice. Then somehow the good karma, I was going on a honeymoon with another classmate, so we joined a tour to Lake Toba. So during that trip, I think before I fly off, I had this food poisoning, but I didn't know what it was. Then I went to see the doctor at this Adventist hospital the morning, and the flight was in the afternoon. I thought I can't fly. But the doctor was very confident. He said, why not? I give you some medication, you go. So I took the medication. Then I went with my wife, honeymoon, and my classmate there. Then when I was there, wow, that thing affected me, the food poisoning. Actually, I went through a very tough patch. But it was not severe suffering or misery or whatever. It's just an eerie feeling, is associated with death. So something very eerie, but not painful. I don't really suffer except I don't feel right. I knew something is not right. So my wife had to accompany me, so he didn't get to really enjoy that honeymoon trip. But at least we see the scenery, we travel. I only miss the boat trip and all those things. Apart from that, I still able to endure. Then when I reached back Penang, landed, I was so sick. Then I managed to drive all the way back to Alastair. But before I reached home, I told my parents I need to go hospital. So I drove straight away to General Hospital. There, I came to know I have some classmates who are doctors there under housemanship. Then I didn't know I got 4 doctors who are under housemanship, all my classmates there. They saw me, they were surprised. They said, "What are you doing here?" I said, "I also don't know." So they checked me out. Then after that, I was hospitalized for 4 days. And then I finally recovered. Then after that, I told the contractor and all those things. I said, "Doctor's advice, I cannot drink Chinese tea only." After that, nobody disturbed me. So I just take Chinese tea. Then they see me, they know, "Oh, Mr. Teo, okay. Yi cha, shi cha." So that's how I actually overcome that. Then from then onward, I kept my precepts. I don't have problem. It was only the first 1 month or so. So this was my experience. But for others, you have to find out yourself. Then later on, when I really went into the cultivation, I was very lucky, very blessed. Yeah, I was never pushed into a situation where I had to drink again. Somehow, people come to know later on, then they never asked me to drink. Then people also start to understand. When they see me, they say, "Oh, Mr. Teo don't drink on. Never mind, we go ahead. Let him have his Chinese tea." So those were the years I went through my career. Then later on, even when I became very senior, I still keep on with the precepts. Then later on, after the training, after 1989, it's no more a problem. So after 1989, when I had the understanding, then I become more flexible and easy going. That's why later on, I remember when I came out to share and teach, there were situations where Kaya met the new people. I remember it was Joyce and Mimi, and that time I think Tony was also there, the Thailand spiritual trip. They came and see me during dinner time, during that spiritual trip. Actually, Joyce was the one that asked Mimi to come and talk to me. Then they asked me this question. "Brother, can we have some very light drink?" They say. It's something like, "We don't drink beer, we don't drink that hard liquor and all those things, but can we drink wine? Because it's normal, English wine or Western wine or whatever wine." Then my answer surprised them. That's why after that, they respect me. I say, "It's up to you, your life, nothing to do with me. You want to drink, you drink. You know there is a precept towards it. So if you decide to drink, that is your choice. That is your life." Then I think finally they try to negotiate because they have been drinking before they come for this trip. So for so many days, they were not even able to have a sip of some wine. So I think there was this craving or desire to have it. So that night I say, "If you all want, I can join you after the dinner and we can go to the coffee house or wherever and you all can have your drink. I accompany you all." Then we went and we chat. And finally, I was very surprised. I think they didn't really order. But maybe one of them order one and they just try it out, that's it. And then after that, they develop the understanding themselves, especially Tony and this Joyce and Vivian. They came to know, oh, Brother Teo, not so rigid. Not like other call you, reprimand you, and warn you, you break precept, you cannot join us, and all that. There was none. That's why later on, when I do all this sharing, I knew the Dhamma is not rigid. Whatever that is rigid, there is no Dhamma. Dhamma is about the individual. Your life, you decide how you want to live it. Whatever you want to do is your choice. My duty is to share my understanding. Then you go and put it to test. Find out yourself. So that's how all this become very beautiful, very meaningful. So if you have problem with precepts, you want to discuss it, you can come. Okay, we go on. Today's topic is very good about precepts. It helps a lot. Upon hearing this, the superintendent Chow of Taipei Ji Hospital became worried. This young volunteer has been drinking a bottle of alcohol a day or liquor a day since he was 9 years old, as he had already been addicted to alcohol for 3 years. Quitting might be very difficult. From Dr. Chow's long experience in treating liver and gallbladder disease, he understood that many diseases are triggered by alcohol. Many of his patients had started drinking in their 20s, and even at that age, it was difficult for them to quit or free themselves from their addiction. This one should be addiction, wrong spelling, yeah. How could it not be challenging for this child who had become addicted to alcohol at such a young age? From a medical perspective, it might not be easy for this young volunteer to quit drinking, but with the wholesome environment and the care and support of Tsuji volunteer, he could most certainly do it. However, after the volunteer left, he would still be surrounded by temptations. Would he be able to maintain his resolve then? So first and foremost, he needs the support offered by the religious perspective as well as a protective environment. If people around the boy had the right mindset and used the teachings of the precepts to help him, then he would be successful in quitting alcohol. Many members of Tsuji Faith Corp had also had the experience of not being able to go a single day without alcohol. Some had even developed alcohol dependency and would start shaking when they stopped drinking. But once they became determined to quit drinking, they willingly accept that suffering and remain firm in their resolve. Even though this took a very long time. Since even people with such severe addiction can quit drinking, I believe that this child can also do the same. If just following the precept, do not drink alcohol, is so difficult, what about the other four precepts? Knowing their difficulties, he must establish the resolve to change and be vigilant at every moment. Then we will be able to correct our negative habitual tendency and closely follow the precept. So this is the author's way and view. For me, keeping precept, I have a totally different outlook and understanding. For me, you must understand the meaning of precepts. Why must you keep them? Why must you observe them? Like I always explain. The first right view, the law of karma. You reap what you sow. Do good begets good, do evil begets evil. Then the Buddha constantly reminded us over the five daily contemplation, the last one. We are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. We are what we are because of our karma. So if karma plays such a great role in your life, if you want to have the good life, you better take care of karma. Because your entire life is almost 90% dependent on karma. So if that is the case, your life, you decide. That is your choice. Unless you understand, you will never keep. You will justify. You will try to procrastinate and all those things. No use. Precept need understanding. It's only understanding that can bring about real transformation, real cultivation. Without understanding, there is no way. If you try to suppress your craving, your desire, you try to keep the precept by suppressing your desire, your craving to drink, to smoke, and to do all those things, no point. But when you understand, you will never violate it. You will never do it. There is never worthwhile to violate all this. So it's understanding. Most important thing is to do things with understanding. Meditate also, meditate with understanding. Keeping precept also, keeping them with understanding. When you understand the essential Dhamma, the advice of the Buddha, you will never go against all this. Because that is life. Your life, you decide. You hold the key to your own life destiny. To be happy or to be miserable is entirely your choice. So choose wisely. Choose to be happy. Choose to have the good life. And you know what to do. So it's not a question of have to keep. No such thing. If I keep without understanding, it doesn't work. I'm trying to deceive myself. I'm trying to force myself to do something that I don't like to do. That is what precept is all about. So when you understand, all this becomes automatic. Then the other thing about cultivation is, if you already have the understanding from the past, I realize when you come, your DNA is also protected. Yeah, my whole family, especially myself, I realize I cannot drink. The slightest alcohol, I'm very sensitive. It will affect my consciousness. Then it gave me the condition to understand how come all this is like that. Then I don't like alcohol drink. I don't like. I don't find any interest in drinking it. And I don't know how people can get themselves addicted. Maybe I didn't drink enough. I don't know. But I don't like the taste. So how to get myself addicted to something I don't like? So that is one thing I came to realize, my nature. If you have your past, you will be protected DNA-wise, and a lot of understanding will unfold, and the condition is such you cannot get into all this. Actually, in my career, my profession, you can ask all my classmates, where got engineer don't drink? There is no such thing. Seldom you find them. But if you have the Dhamma, the Parami from the past, you can do it, no problem, no issue at all. So okay, we will stop here. Almost 10:59, so just nice. We will stop here, then we will open up for session 2. Meditation, reporting, followed by question and answer, Q&A, or any sharing with regards to your own experience about Dhamma practice, Dhamma in daily life, and whatever that you want to share, you can share.
Bertio, this is Bo Cheng. Amitofo to Bertio and all Kayamitas. Bertio, yeah. I have a question regarding the alcohol.
Ah, Ken.
Okay. In Chinese cooking, they have this cooking that in the Chinese wine, you know, in
yeah,
the
yeah, Shao Xing Jiao.
Okay.
Yeah,
Shao Xing Jiao.
Shao Xing Jiao.
So how do you see this
don't worry.
As
that one you don't worry. Even drinking dom and all those things for pregnant lady or those who need to strengthen their health, you don't worry, because after you take already, there is also herb like yomisu and other things, then you sleep. You do not like consume until it intoxicate your consciousness. So that one is okay for health reason. It doesn't mean that when you touch alcohol, you break the precept. You undertake the training to abstain from partaking intoxicant. So that is the thing. Intoxicant is the word that whatever, whether alcohol or drug, intoxicate you. That is the what they call threshold. You must understand. So if you like have a sip or one, you don't have to worry. But do not allow this to justify your action. Because sometimes people make use of it. Especially in the olden days, you know what they used to tell me. Our Buddhist teaching talk about the middle path. So everything is middle path. We don't overdrink, we don't over consume alcohol. Middle path, social drinking and all. If you justify it that way, then it's dangerous. Then you can actually deceive yourself. But it's for health reason, for your whatever cooking. Yeah? Then after you take, you will feel that there is some wine inside there. But you will come to know it is not intoxicating you. It's not causing you to lose your consciousness and become like out of control or leading to maybe heedless thinking, lapsing consciousness and all those things. So if it just added a little bit for the particular dish, especially the one with the mok yi one. You know what is mok yi, right? Is it mushroom or fungus? Fungus, the black fungus. So there is a type of veggie that goes with that. Then sometimes my wife also order where she likes the mok yi. So it's okay. No problem. No issue. Okay? Does that answer your question?
Yes. Because there is some teachers that are very, very particular. Then what about like garlic, onions also cannot eat?
That one is certain Mayana tradition. You have to respect them for their views and their way. Because some of them are trained in that way. They follow. But for me, I find out whatever that really, I won't use the word like logical or what. I find out means I investigate, then I develop understanding, then from there, I move. It's just like this garlic thing, or the five pungent. You heard of the five pungent, yeah?
I heard about the garlic and the onions. The others I didn't go and find out. I just heard
the Mahayana got this particular what they call when it comes to vegetarian, they got this five pungent that this certain group of Mahayana practitioner, they are very strict. They don't take garlic, they don't take onion, then they don't take the other three pungent. So this five pungent. So the reason is, because I also sometimes heard or read up a bit, they used to say it will attract the Mara. Understand? No? The Mara. You know what is Mara? No? More.
Actually, I heard of this Mara, but what exactly is it? I don't know because
you
I don't have experience
what
of
is
that.
The Mara. Mara in Pali is called M-A-R-A. Mara. Mara is Mong. So there is a rhyme of devas up there. They are Mara that come and test those who do psychic. That's why if you do energy field, you go into psychic, you better observe this. According to them, they like to come after people who take the five panjan. But the key is, if you do that psychic, the energy field, then they come after you. Otherwise, this Mara don't come after you. Because this Mara are attracted to people who develop one-pointedness, energy field, psychic, especially jhana, concentration on where the energy field and all those things. So the reason why they take the avoid the five panja is to avoid attracting all this Mara and all those things. But for me, my cultivation, I don't touch those things. Then so far, over the, not only this line, many, many lines, I have tested it. I just eat what I eat because I have certain vows. And then at first, there were a period where I almost went vegetarian. But my vegetarian is not the one with the five panjan, nothing to do with it. I just doesn't want to eat meat. There was a period, I remember, 6 months. Then later on, suddenly certain thing happened. Then I can feel that my body DNA is not designed for vegetarian. There is something not right. That's why I investigate, I find out. Then suddenly inside, the answer came. He said, you have a vow. You vow to take across all these beings that appear as food for you to consume. Then I realized what happened. That's why my DNA doesn't match. Then straight away from that moment onward, I revert back to normal me. I become like a normal person. I don't like last time try to go vegetarian. It's not that I try or what. That time the cultivation really strange is for me to understand. After 1989, somehow there was a period I don't feel like eating meat. I don't feel like eating meat. Then I prefer plain thing. Even when I go and order, I like wonton mee, no, nah? You all know. You know what I told the noodle hawker seller? Huh? I said, wonton mee, moi wonton, moi cha siu. Just cheng choy, put some oil, then plain noodle. He looked at me, you know. Did it mai kiu wonton mee? Did it kiu chai mee? So I said, yeah, yeah, chai mee. I just say, then I felt very good. I felt very good. But then later on, I realized my body not suitable, the DNA. Like not enough nutrient for me. There are many things not right, missing. But then suddenly inside, the answer came. That's why after that, I knew. Then I slowly let things be. Then I revert back to normal because of that vow. That's why I consume. It doesn't affect my cultivation. It doesn't really do anything that is not appropriate. So for me, personally, I find out. So for your case, I don't know why you asked the question. Maybe you heard it or what. But if you really have a situation, you have to develop your own understanding. Just everyone is different. So I can share with you based on what I went through. That's why you asked this question, also very useful, very relevant, so that people can learn. Because a lot of people fail to understand. They end up in argument. I don't know whether, Po Cheng, you face this problem or not. They may tell you that if you don't go vegetarian, you are not compassionate enough, and you cannot progress far and all those things. Then they will give you the benefits of going vegetarian. Then they even write book and argue about vegetarian and non-vegetarian. Then during that time, I think the 80s, the 80s, especially the 80s, there were a lot of these arguments that they even passed me printables on vegetarian and non-vegetarian, the pro and con, that they were arguing. For me, I look at it differently. Why should you argue? It's your choice. If that is what you want, you go ahead. No need to argue. And the key thing is, you have to remember during the Buddha's time, the Buddha himself doesn't insist that the monk must go vegetarian, because Devadatta tried to force him to apply the rules to all the monks. The Buddha said no, because their tradition is to go pindapat, arms round. We don't call it begging. You go for arms round. It's synergy. What is the noise? Oh, Pocheng, we have to mute you first. When you want to speak, only you on back your mic. Okay. Sorry. There is some distortion just now. So if you understand that, then you also must understand the other part. Because if you look at life, you look at all the herbivorous animals, like the cow, the horses, they are actually vegetarian. They eat grass and all those things. But then they develop into meat. Then the human being consume the cow, the whatever animal, as food. Then the other thing about cultivation is, it's not what you eat that make you pure and holy. It's the cultivation. It's your sensitivity of mindfulness, awareness. So it's your action. The way you manifest, you communicate, your speech, your thought process, everything. So cultivation is at the mind level, not at the physical level. Physical level is to impress people. Of course, I have to qualify that. There are people who really genuinely, sincerely vegetarian, but they understand why they must go vegetarian. That one is different. Those are real cultivators who has the understanding. Like Suji, they encourage you to go vegetarian, because to them, even Master Xuanhua, he advised, he said, unless you have the cultivation of Huining, his advice to you is you go vegetarian. Otherwise, the risk is very high. The chances is you will violate a lot of things. Because to them, whatever meat you take, there is karmic affinity and conditioning. So it will lead to karmic and all those things. There is some truth there. But you have to understand, it's more important to take care of mind, your cultivation. It is not what you eat that make you pure. That is the first principle you have to understand. So if what you eat make you pure, the herbivorous animal all would have become sane and enlightened beings. So it's not the case. Then it's not only sitting. If sitting can make you enlightened, the frogs sit a lot, but they are still frogs. So there are a lot of things in the Zen analogy that you can find, give you the answer. So no point arguing about all these things. But if it's a question for you to clear your doubt so that you understand, then it's good. But I believe later on you will understand yourself, because you have moved in into the cultivation. So all this understanding will surface. That's why for me, I investigate, then I understand, then I move. I never rigid about things. When it comes to precepts and all those things, or vegetarian or what, it's your choice. If you know why you have to go vegetarian, well and good. My nature rejoices, and I salute you. But if you don't know why, just because you hear that if you go vegetarian, you are considered more compassionate, then that is not my view. That is not my understanding. My understanding is cultivation is at the mind level. If at the mind level you are still heedless and very crude, then even you tell me you have been vegetarian since birth until now, so what? That is because you choose to be that. I respect. But the cultivation is different. So I always share this. If you say you are vegetarian, this one, please don't quote me and get me wrong. Eh? I am not anti-vegetarian, nothing to do with it. I just want to point out this very important principle. If you think you are vegetarian, you are more pure and more compassionate, then you better think twice. If you are not a cultivator who understand and develop all this because of understanding, then chances are, at the cultivation level, your mind is still very crude. Your defilement is still very crude. But you want to reach a level of compassion by going vegetarian where you don't have the understanding. To me, it doesn't commensurate. I just say, it's nothing to do with right and wrong. To me, the person that is on five precept non-vegetarian, if he keep it well and he sensitive at the mind level, he is a better cultivator than a so-called vegetarian who never really able to have the ability to keep the five precepts or develop virtue, following the advice of the Buddha and all those things. So the understanding will bring forth this understanding to separate you from being like entangled with all this argument. People can have views, opinion, and argument, but you don't have to because you have the understanding. Cultivation is always at mind level. It's not what you eat that make you pure. It's how you train your mind, purify your mind, develop mindfulness and heedfulness, following the advice of the... And that is the one that transforms a person, not what you eat. If you say what you eat, really decide, then Sakyamuni Buddha cannot be a Sammasambuddha, yeah, because he's not a real full vegetarian. And most of the time, he just partake whatever food that has been offered as long as they satisfy the three conditions. He called it, under the Patimokkha, the three conditions allowable meat. I won't call it the pure meat. They call it the three condition allowable meat, san jing ro. In Mandarin, I remember Xuan Hua always shared it, bu jian sa, bu wen sa, bu wei wo sa. Means you don't witness or see the killing. You don't see the killing. You don't witness the killing, okay. Then, witness is wen, see, I cannot differentiate because the first two are very close actually. Oh, the other one is here, word is here, yeah, hearing, not necessarily, you hear also same, then it's considered under the Patimokkha, you hear it kill for you, then it doesn't satisfy the three conditions. That's why I remember my teacher Prajnayantra. When people offer meat, non-vegetarian, he will ask, Achayantra became vegetarian later on. Then this, the three condition one, you have to ask, is the killing you heard just now, the killing is to prepare food and offer to the monks or Sangha. If they say yes, then you should not partake. It doesn't satisfy the San Jing Ro, the three conditions for the meat to be allowable. So, Bu Qian Sa, Bu Wen Sa, Bu Wei Wo Sa is not kill for you to offer to you. Then you don't see the killing, you don't hear the killing, and it's not cute for you, then this become the three type of pyomi. Okay, Bojang?
Yes, brother, this three condition I also
heard
from my teacher in the school. Yes.
Oh.
The reason I asked this question is because when we offer food to Mahayana temple teachers, they always ask us not to have food of this and that. So we are very careful that when we buy for offering or we cook for offering, we will not include all those items in there.
But they never tell us
what's the reason behind it. So this create the condition for Bratio to tell me about this Mara will trap you doing the fuel energy and things like that. You know, the kind of thing. So this part is something new to me. That
Master Xuan Hua mentioned in his book, that you take the five pungent, this Mara, they will come after you. It was mentioned in his book. That's why I read about it. I came to know that for me, it has nothing to do with my cultivation. I don't do that kind of cultivation. I don't do energy field or psychic and all those things. And for me, I investigate and I follow my past, my conditioning, my understanding. That's why I realized everything is beautiful because of the understanding. And everyone is different. You cannot comment, oh, you're not vegetarian. Oh, then you think he lower cultivation. Oh, you're vegetarian. Oh, I miss higher cultivation. It's not defined by what you eat. It's not defined by that purity reflected by, they call it external form dhamma. You know what is form dhamma? Outwardly, you try to project that you are spiritual. But spirituality is not about the outward appearances of things. It's more of the mind level, the cultivation at the mind level. That is spirituality. If you don't have that, then the other thing for me is not so important. But you have both, of course, my nature rejoices. And I sadhu to them because they understand what they do. And they are vegetarian by virtue of their understanding. Like many Mayan monks, they are vegetarian. Even one of my teachers, Ajayantra, finally he became vegetarian. Then my refuge teacher, Xuan Hua, also vegetarian. I respect that. And he always advised, he said, if you don't have the cultivation of winning, you better go vegetarian. Yet there was a question from one devotee. He said, since six patria can eat rou pian cai, you know, rou pian cai, means the veggie is that has been cooked with the meat, then he just take the meat. But they have been cooked together. So someone's reply was very simple. If you have the cultivation like Huining, then go ahead, no problem. But if you don't have, his advice to you is, you better go vegetarian. To me, that is wise answer, which is very appropriate. Yeah. Where is the individual? Nothing to do with you.
The other thing is, you see, before I learn Dhamma, right?
Yeah.
I drink, I eat.
No problem.
But even after I started my cultivation, right? The only thing is, I still eat the garlic and onion, although my teacher don't eat, you know?
Correct.
Which I think is no problem because I don't see, anyway, whatever you share with me, I don't do energy field, whatever. So the Mara will not come after me also. So I can continue eating my garlic.
You will know yourself, saying, don't worry, when you go through that type of cultivation later on, you only need to develop the understanding through your own investigative understanding. You will finally come to understand all this. You technically, you don't need to seek advice. But all this understanding will come. But your problem is, I think, you didn't allow that understanding to unfold far enough. you keep on trying to get advice from people, then you try to like make use of all those that which you think is good for you or sensible, reasonable, logical, and all those things. So that sense, you don't really develop the ability to have that true understanding of self-cultivation and investigation. But later on, when you trust your nature, you forget about what people say. Forget about what the book say and all those things. Sincerely investigate and find out. And you will come to your own understanding, just like how I found out my own understanding. I never follow any book or any teacher. Even my own teachers, some of them are vegetarian. I respect them. I rejoice. But for me, later on, I found out my way. And I move in accordance with what I understand. And my understanding is nothing is rigid. Because it's a conditioned world. Whatever that is rigid, that is not the number. Because you cannot say everything has to be like that. No such thing. Depend on condition. When condition is such, things will manifest differently. Things will never be forever the same. Forever going this way. No. There is a cycle. There is a movement. That's why it's called anicca. And it is dependent originating, condition arising, causal phenomena. Everything evolved, flow, evolution. Civilization also evolved. Nation also evolved. That's why everything, there is a cycle, rise and fall, economic cycle. Even the society that we live in, there is a cycle. So even this pandemic, they come and they go. There's a cycle. Then even nature's disaster, because of condition, they arise, they manifest, then they move on. Then new things arise. They evolve again. New normal. People have to develop new understanding. And this is the way of nature. Nature teaches humanity or living beings through its own nature's phenomena. Ultimately, there is no reality. Hey, no you, hey, no me, not what you think. But nature evolves. Life evolves. Existence evolves. The conditioned world is a world of condition. Dependent on condition, things arise, things manifest. And the phenomenal world of consciousness has no reality. As real as can be, it's only within that moment, split second, it's dead and gone. They arise and they pass away. Only mighty nature rolling by, no reality. So when you combine all this wisdom and understanding, then you will understand why I always say no right, no wrong. Thing is just the way it is. Why you want to argue about right and wrong? Why do we want to be so rigid and specific about things? After all, it's not what we think. Even this form of mind is not a permanent unchanging entity. This is not me. This is just a vehicle and a tool for my nature to come. So when you understand all this, wisdom will take over. Wisdom will unfold and create an independent movement on its own. Can follow or not? What's that?
Yes, brother. Thank you. Yes. Yeah. Actually, what you say is very true. I mean, a few years ago, I'm this, you know, now I'm that, you know, I'm changing, I'm different.
Learn to be independent through your own understanding, not listening to others and following others. That stage is over. If you listen to the right one, you learn, you progress, you become very different. But after you have progress, transform, you have to use your own understanding and move. Yeah, you are you. You are unique.
Yes.
You have your karmic path, you have your nature, you have your understanding. So use that and move. Do not be trapped by always seeking other people's views, opinion, advice, and try to formulate the best one.
Yes, yes, gratitude is very true, because in the past when I was starting to cultivate, I had my teachers to guide me to say this, that. But even with all the advice, I mean, whatever is useful, we make use of it to help us, to guide us, you know, in our cultivation. And those like those that I some of the things that she said also I don't actually follow also, because it's kind of weird for me lah. So I mean, I don't have the understanding, so I don't when I have the understanding, so then I'll follow. Yes, correct, precisely.
Means you don't like try to comment or what, you respect them for what
correct. I just follow whatever that is good lah. Good for me, I follow lah.
Whatever that
with
is
understanding
useful, helpful. But also, don't let it influence you. You should try it out. Then find out whether it's true or no. Whether it
is correct.
Unfold the way it's supposed to be or not, because Dhamma is truth, Dhamma is the reality. If it's the Dhamma, it will show up. That's why Ketang can be realized by the wise, each for them.
Yes, very true. Dhamma is the truth. So it will unfold, you know, if it's true, it will unfold and show it to you. So that is the guiding force, you know. To me, that is a guiding force.
Yes.
So when I cultivate, I see that the Dhamma unfolds, it's really very, very, how you call that? It strengthens your faith, you know. It really gives you so much faith and so much energy that you cannot stop. You cannot stop in your cultivation. That's how I've been practicing since I start, you know, and that somehow leads to who I am today.
But looking back,
I mean, after all your sharing about this alcohol and things, right? So although the five precepts is there, like what Brother Teo said, I also had for health reason I drink Dom, for health reason I drink the Yomeshu or whatever, for health reason I drink those special herbs that my mother made for me in the past, that kind of thing. So I still have that, I still drink it occasionally the rain is very heavy, while my bones aching, I drink so I mean, I don't see that as like a problem to me lah. Also my own understanding lah, so but anyway, what helps me is like, because for me I don't have understanding of the Mara Rams, because firstly I don't do energy field, so I have no idea what is it about. When people talk about it, I also don't understand, I also don't want to know much, because I don't do it, so I don't need to know this.
Because you cultivate the pure way, means Sakyamuni's wisdom way, you don't need all those things. Because the wisdom way, no negativity on. It doesn't involve psychic and all those things. So psychic has its energy. Then when you don't have the wisdom developed, then you have energy, it cut both ways. So sometimes you may think you are using it appropriately for the good of the many, but actually it has its effect on certain other things. But you cannot see, because you have not developed, those people who do the energy field has not developed the deeper understanding of life. So it can trigger off certain type of condition and cause things to arise that can detrimental to other beings and other conditions and environment. So when you don't understand all these things, you start to use them, you get into trouble. It's just like the scientists, when they find nuclear power, nuclear energy, very interesting. Well, it's like free energy, very powerful energy. But when you don't know how to contain them and limit their reach and all those things, then when it gets out of hand, it creates disaster. Psychic is similar. When you cannot control the energy, then it will erupt and cause disaster. and that cultivator can be affected, especially when attacked by Mara. I heard cases where they came and report to me, then it become very severe. So that's why my advice to them is ask for forgiveness and never do all this, and then come out of it. There was one lady who went for one of the meditation, then he ended up severely affected by the Mara, until her whole skull, she thought it was a dream, no? Poor, it was blood all over the skull. So a lot of this type of thing, people who has not witnessed or gone through, they may not know. But for those who have gone through and witnessed and have the experience, they will know. That's why my nature know, never touch the psychic field. To protect yourself.
Thank you, Brother Teo, for
okay.
the sharing.
Yeah, sadhu,
yeah.
For
sadhu, sadhu. Yes, very, very so, good about this. But Brother Teo, fortunately, yes. My circle of friends,
yes.
Dharma friends, we don't have this kind of argument over food. Or
oh, that's
whatsoever.
Very good. That's yeah. very good.
Yeah. So it's only when we do dana that to temple, some temple can have all the thing, some temple cannot. So we just follow, you know, we just follow their request.
Yeah,
if they want this, give it. If they don't want this, don't give.
That is their tradition. Their cultivation.
Correct.
So if
yes,
you have their tradition, it's just like you visit other place, they have their tradition. You have to respect their tradition.
Yes.
So when
respect them.
Like the English say, when you are in Rome, you do it the Roman way. Understand?
You
have to. There is the culture there. So you have to respect that culture. Then you want to go to that temple and make that offering. You have to respect that culture. Sometimes they will tell us you have to remove your shoe, you have to put your shoe properly, you have to respect all this. I have to respect their culture. Sometimes they even tell me, Dharma book, you must hold them in, respect all those things, don't put them on the floor. These are the people who actually stress a lot of form Dharma. The real one, more important one, is the understanding of the Dharma. But these Dharma are like pointer. Point towards the truth. They are not the truth. So do not be confused by all this. So of course the respect comes from the heart. So you respect means putting on the floor is not disrespect. Understand? There are a lot of things we put on the floor. We sit on the floor. But respect and disrespect come from the mind, the heart that understands. If you have the intent not to respect, like other people's religious book, you want to throw, you don't like, there is disrespect. But if it's your own Dhamma book or whatever, then when you go for sharing, you put on the table, but sometimes you got nowhere to put, you need to arrange that on the floor, you arrange that on the floor. Like our Dhamma book, when they come printed so many copies, I told the printer, you just put on the floor first, no problem. It doesn't mean that we put it on the floor, we don't respect the Dhamma. It's nothing to do with that. We are all understanding and form Dhamma.
Yeah. Yes, Brother, I agree totally. Totally agree about these books not on the floor. Yeah. There's some temple that are very particular until very stressful sometimes. Go to the temple that cannot put books on the floor. Very stressful.
They even tell the new devotee or when you stretch your leg in front and point it at the Buddha or the teacher. You say,
yeah, very stressful. So this is also very stressful, yes.
There was a real case that happened to in my class though. There was a new girl from another class or from some other place, not my Kayamita. He came and joined my Saturday meditation class. I don't even know her. So suddenly I got one Kayamita. She is very old. I think 70 years old that time. So she cannot cross her leg. So she put her leg straight, facing the Buddha and me. Well, I sit in front of the Buddha. During meditation, no. And this new lady come, he go and tell this Kayamita Ono, he said, you have been so rude and disrespect. You cannot put your leg like that. And this Kayamita was still quite new. You know. After that, he cannot meditate, you know, he said he was so like disturbed by that comment and all say. Then immediately after the meditation, I normally ask anybody who want to report meditation. She straight away put out her hand and straight away report to me what happened. So I have to explain. I have to actually resolve it amicably. Because people don't understand. So I also don't want to offend that new lady that came in. So I explained to her, I said, you don't have to worry. I said, if you attend my class, this one is no problem. I said, yeah, I can be offended and the Buddha can be offended by your leg pointing in front. Then I'm not a cultivator. The Buddha is not the Buddha. Because as long as you don't have the mental intention to be rude or to offend, where does it come from? It's from the mundane mind, the thinking mind, the belief. So I told her, you don't have to worry. And then only she said, somebody reprimanded me just now. And honestly. So I say, don't worry. We stay in the modern housing. We got condo in there. Your upper floor or walking above your Buddha image, do you know that? Walking above you? You so maison and pantang, you will have misery. You will not have any peace of mind. Well, the world is the world and the earth is round. Understand? Wherever you are with your Buddha image, there is somebody at the other side of the planet who is pointing his foot at you. So all this understanding must be there so that you don't look at form Dhamma, outward form Dhamma. That one is not important. Real Dhamma is cultivation.